Silas and Frost put away their guns and hurried over to pull at the rubble covering Stelmach. He could hear them working, but he couldn't see anything. The smoke and dust had filled his eyes with tears. He could feel the weight of the broken wall pressing down on him, like a bully in a schoolyard, but he didn't seem to be badly hurt. He could still feel his hands and feet, though he couldn't move an inch, trapped under what felt like half a ton of masonry. He lay still, breathing shallowly as the great weight pressed against his chest. They were calling his name, but he couldn't seem to find the energy to answer them. His pain seemed far away. He felt almost peaceful. And then he heard the sound of approaching metal feet. Silence and Frost didn't seem to have heard them, still occupied in dragging bricks off him. Stelmach blinked his eyes as hard as he could, forcing the tears and dust out until he could see again. They'd cleared a space over his face so he could breathe, and looking past Silence and Frost, laboring to free him, Stelmach could see a company of combat androids striding down the street toward them. And it occurred to Stelmach that he could just keep quiet. The robots might not notice him, still buried under rubble. They might just kill Silence and Frost and then go on, and he'd be safe. All he had to do was keep his mouth shut. But he couldn't do that. They were his friends. He forced the warning out, yelling as loud as he could. Silence and Frost whipped around, saw the robots approaching, and their hands went to the guns at their sides, only then remembering that they'd already used their disruptors on the first android, and the energy crystals in their guns still needed time to recharge before they could be used again. All they had were their swords. Metal blades against men made of metal, all of them armed with disruptors. Stelmach yelled at Silence and Frost to run, to leave him and run. But they stood their ground. They looked at each other, eyes locked on eyes, almost ignoring the advancing robots. Something passed between them, anger or desperation, or something that might have been resignation. They turned to face the androids, who raised their disruptors. Stelmach tried again to yell for his friends to run, but he couldn't force the words past his dust-choked throat. And then a great force arose around Silence and Frost, a beating presence that built and built until it struck out in a rolling wave of power that tore the robots apart and scattered their shattered parts the length of the street. As quickly as it had arisen, the force was gone, and Silence and Frost were only, merely, human again. They looked at each other for a long moment. Then they turned and looked at Stelmach, still held down by the rubble. He could see the calculation in their eyes, knew what they were thinking, had to be thinking. They knew he'd seen them use their secret abilities, and knew that as security officer he'd be duty-bound to report them. But if they just walked away and left him here to die in the blazing town, their secret would be safe, and no one would ever have to know. Stelmach understood. It was what he would have done. But even so, he wasn't surprised when they bent over him and started pulling the bricks away again. They weren't like him. Eventually, they got him out, and Silence helped support him while Frost briskly slapped some of the dust off his clothes. His head took a while to clear, but when it did, he pushed himself away from Silence and made himself stand up straight.
You saved me. You didn't have to do that.
Yes, we did. We're family. You'd have done the same for us.
You don't understand. I'm responsible for our being here. I sabotaged the pinnace. The Empress had heard stories of your powers. She wanted confirmation, so she ordered me to put you into danger and spy on you.
Never trust a security officer.
Frost's hand fell to the gun on her hip. Stelmach made himself stand still.
He didn't have to tell us.
Yes, I did. We're family.
He and Silence shared a smile. Frost nodded, which was as close as she got to a smile when she wasn't killing something, and took her hand away from her gun.
So, what do we do now?
We concentrate on getting to the standing alive. Everything else can wait. We'll work something out. We always do.
I hate all this improvising.
They moved on through what was left of the town, making better time now that they no longer had to hide from the war machines. Silence and Frost gathered their power around them again and hid the three of them from the machine sensors. And so they were able to watch unmolested as the robots came marching down a street, driving a desperate army of refugees before them. Men, women, and children ran despairingly, lungs straining for breath, forcing themselves on despite the pain in their legs and backs and chests. The machines killed the slowest, or those who could no longer keep up, smashing their skulls with swift, efficient blows from their steel hands. Blood ran down the cobbled street and swirled thickly in the gutters. Finally, the robots tired of this, or decided their priorities lay elsewhere, and they fell suddenly on the refugees, overtaking them in seconds, and tearing them limb from limb. They slaughtered them all in a matter of seconds, and then moved on, their metal feet stamping through a river of blood and gore. They passed right by Silence and Frost and Stelmach, and didn't see them. Stelmach looked at Silence and Frost.
Couldn't you have done something? I mean, I know they're rebels, but...
No buts. The price for rebellion is death.
I don't know. That wasn't execution. That was butchery. I've seen war before. Seen men kill men for all kinds of reasons. But that was men, not machines. There were children there. Frost looked at Silence.
Don't go soft on me, Captain. They brought this on themselves. They plotted and conspired to bring this about. They betrayed their oath and their honor and their duty and finally themselves. They knew what they were getting into.
Do you think the children knew? Do you think they knew why they were being driven through the streets like cattle and then slaughtered?
Their parents brought that on them. They bear the blame. We have to be strong, Captain. You used to know that. You gave the order to scorch the planet Unseelie.
And I'm still haunted by what I did there. I thought that there was no other way. And in the end, it didn't solve anything, remember? Maybe we should be looking harder for other ways.
That's not our business. We don't make policy. We can't see the big picture.
When did we ever try?
David Deathstalker and Kit Summerisle, along with Alice and Jenny, made a dash for the standing on their flyer. It wasn't the safest of places to head for, with the steward probably in charge there. They were short on options. Besides, when David first came to Viramont, he'd taken the precaution of salting the standing security forces with men specifically loyal to him, just in case. The steward had already betrayed Owen, after all. Right now, David was hoping his people would have taken control by the time he got there. They flew high above the clouds, at the fastest speed the flyer's straining engines could produce. Kit sat at the controls, leaving David to comfort Alice. She hadn't said a dozen words since the flyer took off. She'd seen her family die and her home destroyed, and her face had set in harsh, broken lines. David and Jenny took turns talking to her, trying to reach her, but she didn't seem to hear them. Something inside her had broken, and might never be put back together again. David gave her his gun to hold, and she seemed to find that comforting. In the end, he left her with Jenny and went forward to stand beside Kit.
How are we doing?
As well as can be expected.
Summerisle did not look around.
Our security codes probably no longer protect us from attack, but at this height and speed, most of the machines on the ground shouldn't be able to track us. Our real problem is the flyer's energy crystals. According to the onboard computers, we don't have enough power left to get us all the way back to the standing and still maintain full shields.
Then drop the shields. Our only hope is to reach the standing.
My thoughts exactly. How are the girls doing?
Also as well as can be expected. I still can't believe everything went wrong so fast. You've seen what's going on below. All the towns are in flames, and there are war machines and ground troops everywhere. This isn't a strike force, it's an invasion.
Look on the bright side. At least they're not scorching the planet.
I don't even want to think about that. I've never seen anything like this, Kit. They're butchering these people. My people. And it's all happening because of me.
No, it isn't. It's happening because the peasants were stupid enough to fool around with democracy. They were just asking for trouble.
I let them do it. I could have said no, could have cracked down hard with my security people. I'd have had to execute a few ringleaders, burn out some farms, but everyone else would have been safe. I failed them, Kit. It was my duty to protect these people, keep them from harm. My duty as a death stalker.
David, can we concentrate on the matter at hand, please? Like, what are we going to do if we get to the Standing and it's under the steward's control?
Improvise. There's secret ways and hidden booby traps that only I and my people know about. Owen told me about them. If the steward has got the Standing, I'll take it back from him. And then I'll cut off his treacherous head and use it as a footstool.
Cute. Assume we can take back the Standing. Then what? It won't hold out long against war machines, and we don't have anything there that would get us off planet. Unless that's another of your little secrets?
Unfortunately not. But I wouldn't leave now even if I could. My people are dying. I won't abandon them.
But what can you do, David?
I'll think of something. I'm a death stalker.
That is what got us into trouble in the first place.
David thought about that, and then looked at Kit.
They're after me. It's still not too late for you to split off on your own. Take the girls and head for cover. You used to be Lionstone's favorite. She might well take you back, if you publicly disown me.
Not a chance. You're stuck with me. Forget the altruism and keep thinking. You're the brains in this partnership. Find us a way out of this.
Let me take the controls. I know this area better than you.
They switched places, and Kit went back to check on the girls to try and comfort them. He wasn't very good at things like that, but he supposed he ought to try. The attack ships came out of nowhere, disruptor fire raking the side of the unshielded flyer. Explosions rocked the small craft, and flames erupted in the cabin. David fought the controls as the ship plunged toward the Earth. Kit grabbed a fire extinguisher and flayed the foam over the nearest flames. Smoke filled the cabin. Jenny hugged Alice to her. The flyer's engines cut off, and the ship dropped like a stone. David kicked in the reserves, cursing in an endless, quiet monotone. The ship's plunge slowed, but it was still going down. The attack ship struck again, and the whole rear of the flyer blew apart. Air rushed out the great hole in the rear, sucking the smoke out with it. The flames roared up, and Kit was forced back by the sheer intensity of the heat. David yelled for everyone to brace themselves, and frantically searched his sensor screens for somewhere reasonably flat to land. There was a field next to some open woodland, and David decided he'd settle for that. He took the flyer in, the controls fighting him all the way. The ground leaped up to meet them. The ship hit hard, bouncing across the field and digging a great trench through the grass before finally skidding to a halt just a few yards short of the tree line. The cabin was full of smoke again. Flames roared as they took hold. David sat slumped forward in his chair, only his safety straps holding him upright. Blood ran down his face from a cut on his forehead, and he was hazily aware he'd cracked his head against something hard and unyielding on the way down. Smoke caught in his throat, and he came suddenly awake as he coughed and almost choked. Kit was suddenly there at his side, undoing his straps. David tried to help, but his hands were numb and awkward. Kit threw back the last of the straps, and David forced himself out of the chair and onto his feet. He felt like shit, but his head was clearing. He coughed again and glared into the smoke.
Alice! Where's Alice and Jenny?
I'm sorry. David, I'm so sorry.
David stared at him for a moment and then pushed him aside and fought his way through the smoke and the rising flames to where Alice lay still next to a breach in the cabin wall. A disruptor blast had punched right through the metal hull, splaying the jagged steel edges inward. Blood dripped slowly from the sharp edges. Alice had been torn open all down her left side. Broken ribs showed clearly in the red meat, and half her guts were falling out her side. Her eyes were mercifully closed. David made himself look away to where Jenny lay trapped under the splayed in metal, not far away. She was dazed, but still struggling feebly. David picked Alice up in his arms and yelled back to Kit.
I'm taking Alice! You get Jenny out!
Kit loomed out of the smoke and grabbed David's arm.
David, she's...
I'm getting her out! You see to Jenny!
Kit looked at Alice and the red and purple guts hanging down from her side, and then nodded and went over to kneel beside Jenny. David staggered over to the escape hatch, kicked open the door, and dropped down to the ground outside. Kit tugged at the jagged metal pinning Jenny to the floor. It was wide and heavy, and the sharp edges cut at his hands. He strained with all his strength, but couldn't budge the metal an inch. Jenny had shaken off her daze and was looking up at him with desperate eyes. She couldn't help him. The metal had pinned her arms at her sides. Sweat was running down both their faces now, flushed from the raw heat of the approaching flames. Kit stopped pulling at the unresponsive metal and thought hard. The fire was getting closer, the flames leaping up as they consumed more and more of the cabin. If he didn't get Jenny out soon, the flames would cut him off from the only exit. Jenny saw his thoughts in his face.
Kit, don't leave me. Please don't leave me to the fire.
No, that would be cruel.
He drew his knife. He wanted it to be quick. Jenny jerked once and then lay still. Kit withdrew his knife, put it away, and headed for the exit. He'd done all he could. He dropped down from the escape hatch and hurried across the open ground to shelter in the trees. They wouldn't protect him from disruptor beams, but they should confuse long-distance sensor readings. He had to find David. He'd know what to do. He found David a short way inside the woods. He was crouching beside Alice. He'd propped her back up against a tree trunk and tried to push her dangling guts back into the great wound in her side. His hands were red with blood, and his clothes were soaked with it, where he'd pressed her close against him. He looked up as Kit approached. He was crying, the tears making slow tracks through the blood that had trickled down his face from the wound in his forehead.
She's dead. She trusted me to look after her. And I failed her, just like I failed everyone else.
I'm sorry.
I killed her, you know. She died because she was with me.
You can't blame yourself.
David's tears disturbed Kit, but he didn't know what to do about them.
They're killing everyone here. You tried to save her. You did your best.
David nodded slowly, unconvinced, and wiped tears and blood from his eyes with the back of his hand. He sniffed a few times, then looked up at Kit.
Where's Jenny?
Dead. She died of her wounds while I was trying to free her.
Kit wouldn't normally have bothered lying, but he didn't want to upset David further. He looked around him.
Any idea where we are?
Yeah. I know this place. The standing's not 5 minutes' walk from here, on the other side of the wood. We almost made it, Kit. We were so close. Just a few minutes more, we'd have been safe. All of us.
Kit knelt down beside David.
This is Lionstone's doing. Blame her. Now let's get moving. They'll be here looking for us soon.
David nodded and got to his feet. Kit stood up with him. David looked down at Alice.
I hate to leave her.
She's already gone, David. She's beyond pain now. We'll take revenge for her later.
Yes. There will be revenge. Later.
David turned and walked off into the woods, and Kit went after him. It was cool and calm and quiet among the tall trees, a dark and private place, almost set apart from the rest of the world. The troubles hadn't reached here yet. The air was full of the smell of grass and bark and living things. Kit strode along beside David, enjoying the calm and the songs of the birds. David strode along the open trail, eyes dark and brooding, untouched by the peace around him. Kit kept trying to think of something to say to him, but couldn't think what. He didn't have much experience with this kind of thing. So he strolled along beside David, his hands near his weapons, and left his friend to his thoughts. David would come up with something. He always did. Kit was wary and alert, but even so, the first he knew they had company in the woods was when three figures stepped out onto the trail ahead of them, blocking their way. One wore a captain's uniform, one was an investigator, and the third figure stood well back, holding a gun in a not very threatening way. David and Kit came to a halt, and for a long time they all just stood and looked at each other. The woods were like a great green arena, a place where destinies could be decided and anything could happen. The man with the sword in his hand spoke.
I'm Captain Silence. This is Investigator Frost and Security Officer Stelmach. You're under arrest, my lords. Hand over your weapons and come with us.
I don't think so. I'm the Death Stalker and my people need me. Stand aside and let me pass, or die where you stand.
What he said.
Kit smiled at Frost.
I've always wondered how I'd do against an investigator.
You'd die, boy. Throw down your weapons and you'll live to stand trial.
Get out of our way. I won't be stopped.
The captain shrugged. Do what you have to, my lord. In the end, it always comes down to steel, doesn't it? Silence stepped forward, and David drew his sword and went forward to meet him. Their swords slammed together, sparks flying on the air, and the sound of steel on steel was painfully loud in the quiet. Kid Summerisle smiled his Kid Death smile and went lightly forward to meet the investigator. They circled each other slowly, searching for weaknesses in the other's eyes. Stelmach lowered his gun and backed off out of the way. He knew he was only an observer in this. David boosted, calling on his Death Stalker inheritance, and new strength and energy surged through him, pushing back the tiredness. Even so, he knew it wouldn't last long. It wasn't that long ago he'd spent a whole evening drinking and carousing in the Heart's East Tavern. He almost smiled. It seemed like a lifetime ago, but his body knew different. Too much drink and too little sleep would have made him fatally slow without the boost to hold him up. And even with it, he doubted he could last long. So he pressed the attack, his sword rising and falling with all his considerable strength behind it. Silence backed away one step at a time, but still he met the Deathstalker's every blow, which should have been impossible. They swung and thrust, stabbing and parrying and recovering, blades moving almost too fast for the human eye to follow. And then Silence stopped and would not back away farther. He met the Deathstalker's savage attacks with calm skill and would not be moved. Kit Summerisle pressed his attack with more thought. He'd never lost a fight in his life and didn't intend to start now. But this was an investigator after all. Kit and Frost circled warily around each other, their blades licking out from time to time to test the other's speed and reflexes. They were masters of their craft and saw no reason to hurry. They meant to enjoy this. They smiled at each other and went on circling. David fought on, rage boiling within him. This one captain had come to represent to him all the Empire forces, the blind, awful forces that were destroying his life and his world. He hacked and cut with increasing fury, drawing recklessly on the boost's support, and it was only a matter of time before Silence turned aside one particularly wide blow and ran David through. He cried out with shock as much as pain and sank to one knee, still somehow holding on to his sword. Silence's blade had punched right through David's gut and out his back. He could feel blood running out of himself, hear it splashing on the ground below. Silence jerked his sword free, and David cried out again. Blood sprang from his mouth along with the sound. He tried to force himself back onto his feet, and couldn't. The boost was holding him together, but all his strength was gone. The captain drew back his sword for the killing blow. Kit saw David go down and wasted no time with a cry of rage. He caught Frost's sword in a close parry, kicked her hard in the kneecap, and while she was off balance, he whipped off his cloak and wrapped it around her head. He would have liked to kill her then, while she was helpless, but he didn't have the time. He ran over to Silence, calling out to the captain to distract him from David. Silence turned swiftly, and Kit ducked under the extended blade and rammed him in the stomach with his shoulder. The captain fell backwards, his breath driven right out of him, and Kit ran over to David and hauled him back onto his feet. It only took a glance to see how bad the wound was, but Kit couldn't let himself think about that. There'd be help waiting at the standing. There had to be. He had David moving, and then heard footsteps behind him. He looked back, and incredibly, the captain was back on his feet and charging after them. Kit reached for the gun at his side, and only then realized David was leaning against it. The captain was almost upon them. And then there was the sound of a disruptor firing, and Silence fell to his knees, shot from behind. Kit looked back, and there was the security officer with his gun in his hand, eyes wide with horror at his mistake. Kit threw him a quick salute, pulled David to him more firmly and led him off into the trees. Frost had pulled herself free from the enveloping cloak just in time to see Silence fall. She ignored the fleeing rebels and the shocked, stammering Stelmach and hurried over to kneel beside Silence. The energy beam had torn away most of his left rib cage. He'd wrapped his arms around himself as though he could hold his body together through sheer strength. Frost gently pulled his arms away so she could see the extent of the wound. Blackened stubs of ribs showed clearly in the steaming wound, half cauterized by the energy beam. Behind them, Stelmach was babbling about its being a mistake, and he was sorry, so sorry. But neither of them was listening. Silence's face was utterly white, and he was breathing in quick, shallow gasps. Anyone else would have been dead by now from the shock alone. Frost grabbed his hand and squeezed it hard.
Captain, listen to me. You're not going to die. There's a power in you, in us. Use it. John, you can heal yourself.
She concentrated, focusing on the power deep within her, forcing it to the surface and on into Silence. He gasped once, and then his hand clamped down hard on hers, and he straightened up, his eyes wide and startled. They both looked down at the great wound in his side and watched speechlessly as the flesh and bone and skin knitted themselves seamlessly together until there was no trace of the wound left. Silence took a deep, experimental breath, bracing himself for pain that never came. And then he grinned suddenly at Frost. She grinned back. And together, they got to their feet again. Stelmach was standing over them with his mouth hanging open.
I didn't know you could do that.
Neither did I. Learn something new every day.
I'm sorry, Captain. I'm really sorry.
Silence raised a hand to stop him. Apologies accepted. But from now on, Stelmach, if we get in a fight again, don't help me. He turned to Frost. Her smile was gone, and she was a calm, collected investigator again.
Welcome back, Captain. Always knew you were too mean to die.
Glad to be back, Investigator. Which way did the rebels go?
Deeper into the woods, Captain. Should be an easy trail to follow, the Deathstalkers leaking a lot of blood. Do you feel up to chasing them?
I think so, but there's no hurry. There's only one place they can go now, and that's the Deathstalker standing. And once he's there, we've got him. Kit Summerisle eased the wounded Deathstalker down onto his bed and looked around the luxuriously appointed bedchamber. There was only the one door and the one window, which made it easier to defend the room against attackers. For the moment, the standing was under the control of people loyal to David, but unfortunately the steward had made his escape with most of his people, and they were probably already linking up with the invading Empire forces. It wouldn't be long before they came knocking at the front door.